Welcome to the After the Snow podcast. Man, this is an exciting day. This is the 17th episode of After the Snow. We're going to, of course, be talking about snowfall. We're back in season one. But special day today, a lot of interesting, special things going on. I'm your co-host, Dave Mays.
Why is it so special? Dave, tell us why.
Well, because you back.
Yeah, thank you.
There you go.
I mean, we're going to bury the lead, or we're going to let people know what's so special here. No, the real reason it's so special is because we're all together, right?
Oh, that's another special day. We didn't recognize that one.
Yeah.
That as well. Yeah. It's our first time doing After the Snow in person, and we have Brett back with us. Me and Rick been holding it down. Yes, we know, but this is, you know.
Do you feel the difference when I'm here?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Ladies make a difference, huh?
It's a stronger show. And, you know, no, for real. Because
it's just you, a smooth talker. Okay.
You bring up topics that I didn't see. And I mean, even Dave sometimes bring up topics that I didn't see. And he brings it back to me. And it's always good when you have somebody that, you know, remembers what happened.
Thank you. I'm going to try.
You know, I got short term memory loss.
No.
So we're here. We're here. At La Create Space, which is located in the heart of Englewood, Los Angeles.
I used to stay on the street, Dave.
Yeah?
Right across the street. I had a house right there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Make it clear, it's Englewood in California.
Englewood, California. Englewood section. Section of Los Angeles.
Chicago, right.
Yeah. So, it's a different Englewood. Yes. historic center here. But La Create Space is
beautiful.
Black-owned production space here that's available. They do events. They do all kinds of productions here. Love the vibe in here.
Wait, not just black-owned. I got to give a special shout-out. Is Alpha Man owned, too, okay? My brother, my first fam, okay? For those of you who don't know, I am an AKA, and the owner here is an Alpha. So we are connected on a different level. Yeah. So I got to make sure that is known.
Yes. Thank you. So, we had a big day today here in LA. We just finished we were all together coming from Hollywood, from the site of Top Billing, the new Breakbeat podcast with Bill Bellamy, live from Hollywood Boulevard.
On the block.
Yeah.
It's always so nice to have everybody kind of do like a little bit of a crossover, you know, to have Rick in the house while we were shooting with Bill was pretty cool. I loved that. Right. Yeah. Did you like being there?
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. I couldn't picture the setup at first. You know, Dave was kind of telling me about it. You know, it's windows.
Yeah.
And you have to see it to understand, you know, it looks like Good Morning America or something, you know, right, where they're sitting out and over, Manhattan, and you know, you can see everybody and everybody can see you and they can walk up to the window and people are taking pictures. It was amazing.
You know, what's crazy is that we were there to shoot Bill and we had some incredible guests with T.I. and John Sally and Too Short, but we can't ignore the fact that people were going crazy to see you and to meet you. TMZ pulled up today actually thinking that they were going to see the guests that I just named, but they didn't realize that Rick was going to be there, and the crowd went crazy. The buses went crazy. The TMZ buses that were there, and the camera guys that were there shooting for TMZ, were very excited to see Rick on the
I thought T.I. they really gave T.I. a warm welcome. I mean,
but you were a close second. I'm gonna have to, gotta be honest. Everybody's like, okay, look, Rick.
I don't
Rick,
mind Rick taking Ross. Second to T.I.
Yeah, that's right. It's not bad to come in second to T.I.
Yeah. I'll take that one. But yeah, it was a wonderful day. I think we got some good shooting in and some people going to be looking for. I think Bill's show is going to do really, really well.
Yeah. You know, I'm excited about
the whole way it's set up, you know, the set, the window, the guests that he's getting on the show, you know, everybody's coming out for him. So, y'all be on the lookout for that one. It's going to be big.
Yeah. And it was nice to have our producer Tarek there too.
Yeah,
I feel like Tarek is like Johnny on the spot. Like, if we call him, he's there. No matter where we are, no matter what city, no matter what location within that city, like Tarek is going to show up whatever we need. Even if we don't need him for anything, he's just going to be there as a support. So shout out to our incredible producer.
Shout out.
Much yeah, love no to doubt. No yeah. doubt. You always need a good producer when you're doing these podcasts. Cause there's so much unexpected stuff, you know, in Chicago, they stole my headphones, you know, set the headphones on the table and somebody walked off with them. It's,
to only in Chicago. I hate that, too. As a Chicago native, I hate to hear that. But I'm not surprised. It's happened to me a few times with other things, so not surprised. But I'm sure you were about to say, right, Tarek helped you out, right?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
He was there to help you out.
Absolutely. He came right back.
He's through. Everywhere.
He's everywhere. That's what I mean. He's Johnny yeah. on the spot.
He's everywhere, yeah.
And you need that when you're doing these shows, you know, somebody to produce them. You yeah. know, without a good producer, you can't have a good show.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And Tarek has definitely been, he's made my transition a little easier, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm so unorganized, you know. I'm in Chicago one day, and I'm in Washington, D.C. and Cincinnati, you know, when you're moving around like me, you're very, and I try to travel light, you know. I don't want to put bags up under the plane. I want to put everything in my backpacks and jump on. So a lot of times I don't have all my stuff, and Tarek has, you know, helped keep me organized.
Yeah.
Tell us about D.C. because you were in D.C. last week before the
big fight. Big fight.
Big fight out there. You went to the Go-Go. I need to hear about
that. Oh, man, the Go-Go. No. The Go-Go was crazy. You know, they got these bands, and you know, most of us heard doing the butt.
Right.
So we don't know about the rest of the Go-Go music. In Washington, that's the music that rule. You know, it ain't hip hop. You know, it ain't R&B. It's Go-Go. Matter of fact, I got invited to three Go-Go parties in 3 days. Every night they had a Go-Go party they wanted me to go to. But it was crazy. I enjoyed, you know, the first one that I went to and the only one that I went to. I didn't go to the other ones because I was so busy doing other things. But I really enjoyed the Go-Go, you know. Yeah. The Go-Go was all right. And then they showed me so much love in there. You know, the DJ shouted me out and the band, you know, gave me a shout out. So it was just like, wow, you know. Yeah. It was like the legends in the house. So, you know, I ain't really used to having that type of attention. I'm getting used to it, but it's still kind of new to me. And I don't know, sometimes it'd be a little embarrassing, but.
God, you sound like Dave. Like, Dave's always been such a behind the scenes kind of guy. So this kind of newfound
stardom
and recognition, you know, people know his name, but I don't think people really necessarily always know his face.
No,
you know?
But
soon as they hear the name and the story, they're like, oh,
yeah, shit, that's who that is.
That's the Dave Mays. Okay, got it. But, you know, even today a little bit, you know, after you walked away, Rick, you know, some people, once they heard that was the Dave Mays, the start of the Source and all of his accolades and whatever, then they're like, oh, my God, that's the Dave Mays. You could see you weren't really sure how to accept, you know, the compliments and the greetings from the fans that were on Hollywood Boulevard today. So you're getting used to it, though, I think.
Yeah, it's a new step for me. I've always been behind the scenes more over the years, but you know, definitely starting to get to used to being out a little bit more and being more of a presence for people to see and hear from. And you know, even doing this podcast with Rick has been you know, something new for me that I,
you know. Well, they getting to know your face, because everywhere I went they asked me about the show.
Wow.
You know, and people started telling me, hey, I watch the show all the time. Yeah. I was like, huh?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I guess I'm not nervous. Not that, listen, I'm by no means a real Rick Ross or a Dave Mays by any stretch of the imagination. So, but I'm not nervous, I guess, being on camera or talking anywhere, because I've been around this for so long, you know, and having produced for Oprah, who's obviously one of the biggest media moguls in the world. I think I'm just used to being around people like that and in this world and in this industry. So it's I'm more I guess comfortable in this space. But I guess I don't have to worry about it, because I'm not getting recognized like you guys. I'm just comfortable in this space, right?
Well, you've
here.
Been absent.
Right, I've been absent. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, you've been absent for a couple.
My little, 2,500 Instagram followers, I don't think I have too much to worry about. I'm not like you guys. I'm not big time.
Well, you're going to get there because they're going to get to know you now, so you're back. She's back.
I'm back. Here I am.
Shout out to my hometown of Washington, D.C., by the way. And so your fighter won.
Big fight. Anthony Peterson, one of the Peterson brothers. His brother was a two-time world champ. He lost his belt to Earl Spence. Matter of fact, he was the first belt that Earl Spence got. Mm. So I hung out with them all the week, and we got the W. He has another fight coming up August the 6th, and I think we're going to throw a big swim party the night before the fight. But D.C. show a lot of love, man. I sold a lot of books down there. I'm falling in love with D.C., man. I don't know how you left, Dave.
Guess what's up? We'll be all together in D.C. We spend a lot of time in D.C. as it is. My family's still there. My mom and the rest of my family. Love you guys.
But obviously, everybody relax. There's no city like Chicago. Like, chill out. Everybody calm down. Chicago is clearly number one.
Chicago's cool, but I don't know, man. D.C., man, they show a lot of love in D.C. I mean, Chicago showed me a lot of love, too, but D.C., man, they took it to another level.
Okay, you need to run it back. Come on back to Chicago. I'm going to make sure you get the love you need,
okay? We're going to run it back. Matter of fact, I got invited, I think, June the 7th to some type of kid event they're going to really have, where they're going to have jumpers and all the things for the kids, and they want me to come out. So
in Chicago.
Right. So we're going to see.
All right. Let's do it up. We got to do it up then.
Yeah.
It's going to be nice and warm by then. All right. Yeah. Come on back. All right. We got to jump in. We're doing a lot of catching up. You ready to jump in?
We should episode? Get into snowfall. That's, the thing that brings us together every week is, of course, we watch an episode of Snowfall and we talk about it and things that, maybe inspired us or that we thought about as we watched each episode. So right now we're on season one, episode 5, which is entitled 7-4. And this is an episode that takes place on July 4th, kind of weekend in L.A., and we continue to have like the three storylines going, the Teddy storyline. Last, he was in Nicaragua checking up on things, and now he's trying to fly out of there with the product, with him and Alejandro.
That's a good one.
We got Oso and Pedro and Lucia.
Oso getting abducted.
Yes. And then, of course, we got Franklin and his guys, are all part of this week's episode as well. So the first thing I was, thinking about is 4th of July. There's a big celebration going on out at Uncle Jerome's house. Everybody's having a good time. Rick, what can you remember about the 4th of July? Back in the day, how did things go down?
And we probably were shooting up a car. I remember, we used to do a lot of shooting. It wasn't so bad about shooting back then. Shoot up in the air and show your guns off. So Everybody got their guns and they firing off. So everybody knew, oh, man, what was that?
Right.
So I remember this 4th of July, we was just shooting in the air. And kind of got tired of shooting in the air. So one of the little homies pulled up and a car that we call a bucket, something you pay $2,500 for. And I say, man, let's shoot that car up.
Wow.
And we just start shooting it, man. And we had the AKs and the AR-15, I think it was. And these guns, you could shoot the car in the back. And you can see it come out the motor, ricocheting the sparks and stuff in the motor. So that really fascinated us. Mm. And we just kept shooting.
Now, the guy who drove the bucket there. He wasn't in the car.
No.
Get out of here. So how far away did everybody have to stay back in order to do all the shoot on the car?
Oh, we
or
wasn't
it's not like ricocheting, like hitting.
No, they're not ricocheting.
Okay.
They're going through bumpers.
Oh, okay.
Them guns are so powerful that they broke the motor block to the car.
Oh, wow.
Like, it would penetrate the block of the car.
Wow.
From the, you know, you shoot it from the trunk, and it would go through the car and then hit the motor and bust it.
Wow. We weren't fancy like that in Chicago. I mean, I remember growing up, like, people were definitely going out in the alley, shooting, taking their guns, shooting up. And I just remember all the dogs in the neighborhood, you know, that sound irritates their ears so badly. Dogs were going crazy. My own dogs were going nuts. So we'd always try and put them in a separate room during that holiday weekend. But now it's still the same. Like, at least in my mom's neighborhood, those gunshots are going off starting like that, like July 1st. Through maybe like the 6th.
Yeah, they do it. They used to do it here. Now they crack down here now. They don't really.
Really?
Yeah, because they're saying sometimes, you know, you shoot up in the air and those bullets go up and they come down
and hit somebody.
So they don't really like you shooting here in the city anymore. So.
Damn, they have not cracked down in Chicago. Guarantee you it's going to happen this year. And probably guarantee you somebody's going to get hit.
Yeah. So. But yeah, that's how we would. You know, spend our 4th of July's. Definitely don't want to be standing out.
So it's interesting because I feel like, and this might be a little bit of a spoiler, but when we fast forward to later seasons, we talked a lot about how we felt like the family wasn't really having fun. But I felt like in this this episode, they're having some more fun. Like,
having a little fun.
But things get lost later on.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil too much for anybody who hasn't who isn't totally caught up, but I like seeing this version of the family, like actually enjoying themselves a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely was a different feel for the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But you know, these early series are more LA. And it's probably because John was still alive, you know.
Good point.
He probably had a big hand in how these storylines went. Then, as we know later on during the series,
things changed a little bit. Yeah.
His dad is a presence, you know, in this show, significant presence.
Or lack thereof, yeah.
Yeah. But he's, you know, in the earlier episodes, we learned Franklin's dad is homeless, and
we never found out what happened to him though. You know, how did he get like this, and why did his mom even like him?
Right,
you know what I'm saying? Why would she like a guy who they're portraying in the movie right now? You know, the police are choking Franklin out, and his dad walks away. You know, I don't see that happening. You know,
right? That was rough.
I mean, possibly, but. And I don't like the way they portrayed.
I didn't like that either.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
That was hard to watch. And I think about it as the younger sibling to someone who has an older brother. And I just put myself, thank God my brother's never been in that position where, you know, cops are choking him out. But I just imagine my dad being there. He would intentionally like put the focus on himself if he had to. Like, my dad would catch a case in order to save my brother, if that's what
absolutely.
It meant. There's
absolutely.
No chance he would walk away watching my brother go through something like that. You know what I mean? Like, he would put the heat on himself. So it's just, it was just so heartbreaking to watch, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't like it at all.
No.
I didn't like the way, because, you know, black men already are stereotyped of not caring about their siblings.
Their sons, yeah.
Their sons, mm-hmm. To see that happen and to see it be portrayed in that light for me was a turnoff.
It was a lot. Yeah.
You know? And I've been choked by the police before. So just for the record,
wow,
I know what it's like. And I've been choked when I had done nothing.
You really?
Know, not cursed them out or not done anything. Yeah. So I know what it's like to be in that position. And
did you have a... support system around you, like in that moment, were there friends or family near you as that was happening?
No. Usually when they do it, it's when you're by yourself.
Mm.
it's hard for me to believe that the cops would do it with that many people.
That many
out.
People, yeah.
You know, that's almost causing a riot.
But I guess at that point, there weren't devices where people could be recording. And, you know, it's not like today where everybody's going to immediately whip out their cell phone, their iPad, whatever, and start recording.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, too. And then the cop pulled out his gun. But I don't even know in those type of situations if pulling out his gun was enough, you know.
Yeah.
I still would see somebody still intervening, you know, like, oh, you're going to shoot me, too.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Lucky that the black cop pulled up, you know,
right
to the rescue.
Yep.
Franklin's neighbor. Yeah.
Franklin's neighbor. What's his? I don't know if it's his girlfriend or
Melody is
Melody's
is
the, dad. Is, right?
Is, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's his girlfriend, but the dad don't know.
Right. His little sneaky link, whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
But before that scene happens, where the police show up and Franklin mouths off, and then he gets put in the chokehold and punched and stuff, and the dad walks off. Franklin has discovered some old photos of his dad in the garage because his mom comes home and he shows her this picture of his dad. And this was his dad as a Black Panther. Mm. So we kind of, it's never stated explicitly at this point yet, but we get the, you know, we get the understanding
right.
that his dad was a former Black Panther. So
you know he's got some sort of
militant
rebellious streak in him somewhere. Assuming that he's involved with the Black Panthers,
right?
And not an informant,
right?
Because the way he walked off, it would be like an informant,
right? Right. You know? That's a very good point. Yeah. Like now he's caught up. I'm out of here. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
What was the presence of the Black Panthers like in L.A. in the 80s?
Well, when me and my mom moved out, and I was still young, you know, I wasn't even in elementary school when the Watts riots happened. Mm. And that's when I really noticed the Black Panthers. They were marching, giving out food, and basically supervising the cops, you know, where they didn't want cops to do what we saw happening in Franklin, because back then you didn't even have to curse the cops out. You know, they were just doing stuff to blacks just because.
Just like now, pretty much. Nothing's changed.
Yeah, nothing's really changed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so the Black Panthers was feeding people, you know, had food drives, just kind of like a neighborhood police force, you know. I remember seeing the National Guards driving down the streets, you know, when they had the riots and whatnot. I remember the whole Watts riots, you know, I mean, when it went up in flame. I don't know if the Black Panthers did that. I'm not saying that they set it on fire, but they were kind of like the force that the black community was leaning on.
Did you ever get to know any of the leadership of the Panthers in L.A. around
that? I didn't get to know the Panthers. My brother marched with the US. So he did take me to a couple of US rallies, you know. And the US was like a offshoot of the Black Panthers. They didn't carry guns, to my knowledge. I never saw them carrying guns. The ones that my brother took me to, they would just march down the street, you know, maybe 30 or 40 guys dressed in military uniforms. And they would be doing army drills, you know, with the steps. And that's the most I remember about it. I do remember my brother coming in one night and the cops had broke his nose.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, and that kind of gave me a little bit of a sour taste about cops, you know, because it's like, it's my brother, you know, my older brother, too. You know, somebody I looked up to and. You got a problem with him. You got a problem with me. Even though I was only about 4 years old, but you know,
you already had that just protective instinct, right?
Right. Like, that was my guy.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I'm the same way.
Yeah. It was my guy. You just put your hands on my guy. You know? It was my mom and my guy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. My that's brother. Me too. With my dad being deceased now, I mean, but always growing up, my brother and I are almost 5 years apart. Not quite, but, always the same thing. Like, and I come from a family of mostly men, but it's the same thing. I'm like, if you hurt him, like, it's me next. Like I'm coming for you too. You know?
Well, my brother and I are seven years apart.
Okay.
But, I looked up to him most of my life. And he was my first hero, you know.
Same here. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah. So that's pretty much what I remember about the Panthers and the riots and whatnot. You know, when I got older, I remember the SLAs, you know, when they had their running with the police and the police shot the house up. You know, they had a big shootout, big shootout, set the house on fire and burn up everybody inside the house. That was right there in my neighborhood where I grew up at. So I remember that as well. I remember when, what's her name? From Oakland. I can't think of her name. When they were looking for her and, what's their name? I can't even think of their names right now. I had a brain fog. But anyway, they were leaders of the Black Panthers. Okay. And I remember when they went to jail, you know, I was old enough to remember that they took them to jail.
One of the leaders that you were talking about?
Mm-hmm.
With the hair?
Yeah, with the natural.
Yes, God, she spoke to my high school. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'll never forget
Angela
what she
Davis
spoke
to.
You're
talking about?
Angela Davis.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Angela Davis. And Huey Newton.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And George Jackson, George Jackson brother, I think it was his brother, went to court and kidnapped the judge, jury, and everybody, and held him hostage trying to get his brother out of jail. So, you know, it was some guys that was like real rebels,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was really going against the system. It was a system they didn't believe in, a system that had been treating blacks unfairly, and they felt that extreme measures was necessary to get their justice.
Is there anything you would have done differently in this episode, in that moment with Franklin being, a reason we're choked out, and obviously we said we wouldn't want his dad, like, walking away and just leaving him there, but is there anything else you would have done differently in how Franklin handled things, how his mom handled things, the crowd, anything, if you could rewrite that episode or that part of the episode?
Wow. How would I do that episode? I guess I wouldn't have Franklin, talking shit to the cops. You know, that was the first thing.
Try to always stay pretty like humble if ever approached by the cops?
Yeah, it's best to do that.
Okay.
You know, because all you do is provoke the situation, and it's a situation you really can't win.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Were you gritting your teeth though? Like, were you thinking like, man, fuck them? But like inside thinking that, but. Outwardly saying,
we're
like, okay,
always,
yes, sir.
Always, they were always looked at as the enemy.
Yeah.
You know, because they pull you over in the car, you got to sit on the ground or lay on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
More than likely, they pull you out the car with guns drawn.
Mm.
They're looking for guns, you know, drugs. So automatically, you have that sense that these are not my friends.
Yeah.
You know, we're not on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
So you automatically start with that. But you only make the situation worse when you aggravate them.
Right.
You know.
So it's best just to fake the humility and just stay humble.
Stay humble.
Yeah, yeah.
And get it over with. You know, you're going to go through it anyway.
Right.
You know, either you go through it with these two cops, you know, the steer, or you're going to go through it when they call 30 more.
Right.
With the helicopter.
Yeah. And the batons and everything else. So you might as well just get through it, grit your teeth, and get through it, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you would have changed him mouthing off.
Yeah, I would have changed him mouthing off. I probably would have just had it where the mom came out. Because really, they're trying to keep their party going.
Yeah. That's it. Everybody just wants to have fun.
Yeah. So that's the main part. Now we know people have been drinking. And I don't think none of the neighbors would have called the cops talking about they heard gunfire when it was firecrackers. You know, they know the difference.
They know, especially given the holiday weekend, you know.
And they know it was 4th of July,
you know.
And the cops are leery about coming out during the 4th of July anyway.
Anyway,
like I said, during that time, you know, people was popping them pistols.
Yeah.
So they would have known the difference between fireworks. And then even the uncle up on the roof with fireworks, you know, that's like a little, a little awkward. I never knew anybody to get on the roof and shoot off fireworks.
Right. We were always in the middle of the street. Alley, in the streets,
We used to get in the middle of the street because, you know, California is always a dry place. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to be shooting fireworks in the bushes and start fires and whatnot. So mm-hmm. most of the time when you see fireworks in our area, they're usually out in the middle of the street. Like, you can look down the street and everybody's in the middle of the street shooting fireworks because it's concrete asphalt. So, you know, it's a pretty safe environment. So I would have had the fireworks in the middle of the street, you know, shooting them from there. But then who shoot fireworks in the daytime? And that was another one that you shooting fireworks in the daytime, sparkles. And
you kind of really asking a little bit for a target on your back, kind of, right?
Yeah, but you can't really see them anyway.
Right. Well, that's true. What's the fun in it?
Yeah, fireworks are usually shot at night. So it was, you know, just a little off,
a little awkward.
Yeah, a little awkward.
Is your mom, or was your mom, like, does she have that little fiery side?
My mom was very fiery. My mom was a tomboy.
Okay, so we can relate, because I grew up a tomboy too. So
yeah, she had a big family. Her whole brothers and sisters was like 14, 15.
15 of them.
Yeah, but then she had, my grandfather had two families.
Oh, but they all knew about each other at some point.
Right, they all knew about each other. They went to school together. I think him and my grandmother got married at like 13 years old.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he had two families. Then mom had like 24 brothers and sisters all together.
Wow.
And she hung more with the boys. My mom played basketball in high school.
Yeah.
And when she got older, she carried a pistol.
Wow.
So yeah, she was something.
That little fiery.
Yeah. She was fiery.
is your mom with us still? Or she?
And she passed about 6 years ago. Yeah.
6 years ago. Okay. Sounds like you guys were always pretty close, though.
Yeah. When my mom came to see me in prison, when nobody else would come, you know.
Wow.
So she never.
Like that unconditional, like when they say a mother's love is unconditional. Oh, absolutely.
Well, you know, they say a child and a mother, you know, those two are unconditional. Mm-hmm. And my mom was that. You know, I should tell her, because I was in San Diego. I did like 6 years in San Diego. Mm-hmm. So she would drive from here to San Diego to see me by herself. And I'd be like, hey, lady, don't come up here more by yourself.
Yeah.
No, don't come up here no more. If you come up here again and you by yourself, I ain't coming out to see you. So I had to really, like, drill that into her because she was, like, 70-something years old, you know.
Making that drive by herself?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then sometimes we go.
But you probably couldn't even stop her, right, even saying, don't do this.
No, she stopped. She stopped when I told her that. Okay. Yeah, because I meant it. If she came up again by herself, I wasn't going to come out. Mm. So she stopped doing it. Because sometimes she'd have to drive back at night, you know, by herself. Oh, yeah. So I got her to stop doing that. But yeah, she was something. She was something. And, you know, her house was really where all the kids in the neighborhood hung out. You know, mm-hmm. we had basketball court in the yard. So kind of like what they had there at our house was kind of like that every day. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd be playing basketball, either we on the street playing football, or we riding our bikes around, you know, with the ramps. And it was just like our house was the house to hang out at.
So it seems like a pretty honest depiction of your mom and Franklin's mom. Like, there's that seems pretty.
Yeah, they
pretty
true. They close. Yeah. They close.
Okay, so they got that right. Okay, that's good. That's good. Sorry, Dave. I know I'm taking over. I feel this is your job.
Please.
You like to ask the questions.
Please,
and I'm taking over.
This is what we.
Because I'm excited to be back.
This is what we've been missing. So, you know,
the woman's touch.
Right. Yeah. That's right. That's exactly. What you guys need, the touch.
Yeah. I was thinking about Oso and Lucia and Pedro. Talk a little bit about what's going on with them. Also wants to become a partner now. You know, he's basically killed two people for the cousins.
And covered. Yeah. And covered with the dad. And the dad already told him, don't play no games.
Right.
Like, he already playing games. You know what I'm saying? He come in the picture, you know, out of line. So he felt like, look, I got a lot to come, and I done put a lot on the line already. You know, if the old man find out what I did, it's curtains for me.
Right.
So that was pretty interesting, you know, when the old man was questioning, you know, trying to find out if he was going to induct him into the family or not. That was interesting.
Yeah. He tells Lucia afterwards that her uncle, which is the dad kind of in charge, and her cousin are crazy. She likes his dad, her dad. He's the one that's kind of like the more calmer partner. But
that was her dad sitting in the back.
Yeah, exactly.
Saying that we're really farmers.
Exactly. Yes, mm-hmm. We're farmers. We farm it.
What was they? They were selling weed.
I think so, yeah.
Because they never really said what they were selling, but
right.
We know that they wasn't selling cocaine, because if they would have been, they wouldn't have had to steal the money to get into the cocaine business.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. But her that's her dad, and we see also, and Lucia starting to, you know, grow closer, the relationship there we were talking about last week, mm-hmm. But we're seeing it more now in this episode. And
well, the uncle recognized it too. Remember, he told his son, he has a pretty little girl.
Right.
Attention. Yeah. Uh-huh. Something like that.
Uh-huh. He said he got her ear. Yeah, he got a pretty little ear, he said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the dad still don't really trust also, mm-hmm. you know. And he's kind of questioned his son, because he asked his son something about what he do like somebody else had done. Son was like, no, I love you. I never cross you.
Right.
You know, which he was lying to him when he said it.
Right. He just kind of came out with that. He didn't really even need to say that, you know.
Yeah.
He kind of told on himself a little bit. And the dad was kind of like, I think, picking up on it to an extent.
Well, you know, when your son, you know, you don't never want your son to cross you. You know, like, damn, you crossed me.
Right. Like, it's not even, shouldn't even be a question.
Yeah. Who else would cross me if my own son, if you can't trust your own son, you know? Somebody that you raised and brought into the world. And, you know, I imagine he's been taking care of him all his life, you know.
And especially, like, something about that father-son relationship. Like, I don't know, son crossing a dad, that just seems even worse to me than a son crossing a mom. Moms are going to, like we were just kind of saying, moms are going to forgive you no matter what.
Your dad might not, though.
Yeah. They might get to throw a bolt up in there. I don't know.
Yeah, dad might not forgive you. But yeah, he was... you know, Oso had already crossed them. Really, he'd already crossed that line, mm-hmm. you know, enough to, you know, stole their money and killed his guy, you know, one of his main guys. Well, really, probably two of his main guys, because the other guy that he killed to cover up for the other murder, you know, I never really saw what role that guy played in the organization, but apparently it was pretty high.
He lost two of his top guys over this whole thing.
Yeah. Over the robbery. Yeah. That's what it was, a robbery.
So Teddy, we just touch on him real quick. Teddy, again, we just basically see him trying to get out of Nicaragua with Alejandro. Teddy doesn't want to go with Alejandro's plan of where to land the plane. He hasn't had a chance to vet it. So he tries his own plan, and of course they end up crashing in the desert somewhere. And Teddy's going.
Did they fly that plane all the way from Nicaragua?
Yeah,
that little plane,
the last plane.
Wow, I don't even like those little like 20-minute. You know, when you're going from like the main place to like a little island, you take a little 20-minute whatever. Damn, I couldn't imagine like a couple hours on a flight like that.
No, a couple of days.
right.
How far is Nicaragua from America? You know, like, wow, they got to fly across Mexico probably.
Yeah.
It's probably a nice.
Yeah, well, they crashed somewhere in the desert. And fortunately, Alejandro isn't dead. He wakes up. And he's getting them.
Looked like he'd been asleep a couple of days. In a coma, huh?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he opens his eyes. A little weird to me, you know, like, where did that come from? You know, they never showed why the plane crashed. You know, I was interested, like, what happened to the plane? You know, why?
Yeah, where did that come from?
Yeah, where did the crash come from? You know, all of a sudden you just hear the plane crashed with no information about what happened. It seemed like to me they was just trying to do some fill-ins, you know, cover for time.
Stress the time a little bit.
Yeah.
So was there anything in this episode, give or take, that actually happened to you or your people?
Nah, not really. I mean, you know, the party, it's kind of normal.
Right, but that's like every black family on
4th of July,
right?
Yeah, everybody's barbecuing on the 4th of July.
Right.
You know, back in the days, it was more of a neighborhood thing. Like, people used to mingle more. The gangs, well, before the gangs really got really active, you know, mm-hmm. you could be all out in the front of the house and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time when people throw parties, you know, they do it in the backyard.
Yeah.
You know, not all out in the front.
True. I don't think we've ever thrown
a front yard party.
We've always done back, and like, you can look down, see your neighbors, whatever. We might like stop by our neighbors, or they'll come over to ours or whatever. But
yeah,
you know, we're not doing things on the front yard.
That was more like a street party.
Yeah. What do they call it? Like a block party.
Like a block party.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So nothing you were remembering relating to that actually happened to you necessarily, other than the 4th of July party that we all do.
Okay. So the last thing we see in the episode mm-hmm. is Franklin on the roof with his buddies, Leon and Kevin. And, you know, Franklin earlier in the episode was kind of arguing with Leon about Leon wants to bring Kevin into the business, and Franklin wants to keep his circle small. But
wait, time out. But didn't they, am I forgetting or confusing an episode? Didn't they also like try some of the product or something in this episode and Franklin was pissed off? Am I?
Try some. No, I don't think they tried anything.
No, I didn't see that. Okay. I don't remember that.
Okay. Episode. All right, cool.
But at the end, like last episode, the last thing it ended on was Franklin at Avi's house mm-hmm. telling Avi, look, I've had enough. Mm-hmm. This is too crazy for me. I'm out. I'm giving up. And we talked about that last week.
Like, right.
You know, we'll see how long that lasts. So by the end of this episode, Franklin says to Leon and Kevin, hey, Kevin, you know, can I borrow your auntie's car in the morning? Because that way we don't have to take the bus to go see Avi. So he's back in the business. That's really the big news of this episode. Franklin is back in business.
Mm. I missed the part where he asked it so he can go see Avi. I remember him asking for the aunties, could he borrow the car?
Yeah.
But I didn't know that.
That's what he said.
That he was talking about to go see.
Yeah. He said, I'm going to see Avi. And Kevin and Leon was like, yes, let's go. You know, they want.
But I'm only surprised that he hadn't bought his own car back then. You know,
if it was just like a little something to get.
I mean, you could get a car back then for $100. You know,
that cheap? Right.
Yeah, you should go buy it. I bought my first Chevy when I stopped playing tennis. And before I got into the dope game, I bought my first Chevy for $100. And we bought, you know, 60. I'm talking about good running cars, you know, like.
What?
Yeah, they was cheap back then, you know. Chevy four-door Impala, you know, $200, $150, you know, $300, you know, you'd have a car. But, you know, stuff was cheap then. You know, back then, you could buy a house in L.A. for, like, $45,000.
That's crazy. I'm thinking, like, I went with my
you could
brother
buy a brand
when
new
bought
Cadillac.
His first car, which he was 16 and he bought his first car. He was so proud of himself because he saved up his own money. That would have been 98 when he was 16. And the guy was so nice. It was a white guy he bought this car from. He was like, oh, okay, you know, like, oh, black boy trying to buy his own little car. I'm going to give you a little break. He had it listed for, I want to say, like, $5,500. And he cut him a break once he realized, like, it was a kid buying it for himself. And I think he sold it to him for $4,000.
Yeah, but back.
Used car. I mean, it looked nice. It was nice.
Back then, you could buy a brand new Cadillac for $15,000.
That's crazy.
So you're talking about a brand new Cadillac. Now you go back to, say, a 62 Chevy, you know, and this is before they was classics.
Right.
You know, they weren't classics in 78.
Right.
Right.
You could find 62 Chevys and, and 59.
Yeah.
You know, Bel Airs and 57s, they was everywhere.
Right.
So the price was really cheap. You know, nobody wants to drive those old cars.
Right.
It was only when the lowriders started to spruce them up and put the wheels on them and everything at the price. And then the videos hit, you know, so people around the country started seeing them before the price started going up. But, I had a 68 Impala Capri. I paid $100 for it.
That's crazy.
Now, I didn't have a front seat in it.
What year would this have been? Give or take?
78, 79.
Okay. Okay. So 20 years later, buying a used car. Okay. Yeah, I guess 4,000.
And the car ran like brand new. You know, somebody had stole it, took the front seat out of it, so the people didn't want it no more. So,
yeah.
So I bought the car for $100.
That's wild.
And it didn't have no keys, which I should take wire, had to tie the wires together to start it.
That's crazy.
And I drove that car, you know, when I first started selling cocaine. That was the car that I was driving, you know, until I went to the junkyard, bought me a seat and put in it. And I drove that car for a long time.
How many years you think you drove it?
Probably a year and a half. Not a long, long time, but... You know, I started stacking money really
right,
quick.
Right, once you got some money.
Yeah, because I started getting, you know, I started getting money at 6 months. I at least was making, you know, $600 a day, $500 every day. So
I didn't have to
drive a $100 car no more. I could move up a little bit.
Right. You could take one day's work and get you a $600 car at least.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so my cars got a little better as my money.
As your money increased, right.
And I didn't start off with a kilo either.
Right.
Yeah, if I'd have started off with a kilo, well, I don't know, I probably would have messed it up. You know, if you give somebody that kind of, you know, that much work, and they never did it before. But the good thing about him is that he was selling whole kilos. He didn't grind his way from the bottom. You know, he didn't have to take it and sell $20 and $20. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He ran into somebody who just gave him $16,000 right off the bat. Right. Which is unusual, you know.
How old were you when you, like, really kind of got started?
I was 19.
19. And how old was Franklin? Do you remember how old he was when they have him getting started?
I didn't ever see him mention his age.
Yeah.
Or I guess, well, no, I don't want to spoil anything. So I'm just going to say spoiler alert. I guess when we see it down the road, he's having trouble paying his tuition, right? And he drops out of college. So he's college age, 18, 19, 20. Mm-hmm. Remember? He couldn't pay this tuition. He drops out, comes home. Remember?
Okay, that's
so he
right.
He probably was around the same age, yeah.
Oh, we're giving it away, but...
I said spoiler alert. not a big fact to give away, so...
Yeah.
It'll be all right.
Fair enough. So this is After the Snow. This is the podcast for... fans of Snowfall, but fans who want to get, you know, a real accurate inside perspective on this TV show.
Yeah, the accuracy lives here. You got the man, the myth, the legend,
Freeway Rick Ross, the real Rick Ross.
Who wrote the book.
Wrote the book.
That it was based on.
Yeah. That's right. So we thank you guys. We are excited, man. Hopefully we can do more in-person stuff like this.
I love this. I mean, if you got to fly here like every week or something. This is much better than
seeing you on the screen.
Right.
Hey, let's do a poll. We'll have our social team do a poll. Like to see, do they like it more when we're in person? Or are they okay with the virtual thing?
Yeah, I already feel like we're going to get more views just from... doing it in person together.
All right, but we're gonna do the poll. Rhonda, Dre, we're gonna do a poll, guys. Let's put the poll out. So that's our social team.
Let the fans.
We've done
even
all these shout outs. That's our bomb social team.
Hit us on social media. Let us know what you think. Should we be together? Should I fly to Chicago sometime?
Yes.
Or they fly to LA sometimes?
Because we're gonna move Chicago up to number one on the list of cities that you love. All right, so you gotta come to Chicago. All right.
So y'all hit us up. Yeah. Chicago too cold in the wintertime.
That's why I said, what I tell you earlier, I said you gotta come June to September 15th.
Have you been out on a boat on the lake in Chicago?
No, never.
We're gonna take y'all on our boat.
Never.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, we gotta do that.
All right.
That's it.
My man having a white party down there. My man Groove is going. I mean, he's going to have a yacht party.
All white
yacht party.
When?
I got to get the date. I'll get the date and let you know. But I got to come to that.
Okay.
And there's something called Black Scene where all the black people with boats go out.
Yeah.
And party on the boats.
That would be interesting.
And Dave is a honorary black person. He's always he's always welcome.
Yes.
Thank you.
No doubt.
All right. Well, man, this is awesome, man. Glad we were able to do it this way this week. And
big.
Yeah, After the Snow, the podcast. We'll be back next week. Thank you.
Wait, let's run down the socials.
Oh, I didn't give the socials.
Because we got to put out our poll.
That's right.
We already know. Everybody's going to like us in person.
So you can find us on Instagram at Breakbeat Media, and also on our YouTube channel. Just search up Breakbeat Media on YouTube. And that's where you find the visual versions of our shows. All the audio lives on Apple, Spotify, all the podcast apps where you listen to podcasts. And my IG is at The Real Dave Mays. You guys?
Mine is Freeway Ricky.
Mine is at I Go By Brett J. But I'm thinking about changing it. But for now, follow me at I Go By Brett J.
Perfect. This is Breakbeat. This is After the Snow.
Peace.
We see y'all next week.
Peace, y'all.
Peace.